Welcome to Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA. Over the next hour, you'll be introduced to business and local leaders impacting our community. Text your comments or questions directly to the studio in real time via ZipWhip landline texting at 540-371-5756 or comment on Facebook at WFVA 1230. Now, the host of Town Talk, Ted Schubel.
Town Talk powered this morning by Stafford Tourism. For information on events and activities, visit tourstaffordva.com. John Hennessy, the chief historian with the Fredericksburg and Spotsylvania National Military Park, is here. John, good morning. Good to see you again.
Ted, it's been a long time since I've been on. It's easy to speculate as to why that is. The Red Wings are way out of it, done. They've lost, and I'm just shocked and surprised that your personal alliances have affected your professional duties so profoundly that it's been, six or seven months since
it's been a while
you've
since you've been here, it has.
So it's a sign of your own sports-related depression and all of that. I'm glad to be here to lift your spirits.
You are. You're
because
here.
The Penguins, as you know, are doing well. Yeah.
They are, but they did the Capitals did beat them for the division. Now, they'll play in the playoffs.
Yeah,
but,
well, the Capitals have beat them for the division every year for the last how many? And how many Stanley Cups have the Penguins won?
Yeah.
Or the Red Wings won lately?
I am hoping that we're not looking at a three-peat for the Penguins
this year. We are, and I'll come back and assuage your wounded soul in June after it's done.
Oh, that's just something we don't even want to think about. There are the weather's going to eventually warm up, I guess.
Theoretically.
And this is the time of year when things start getting going again with the Park Service. Although you have people come by all the time. I see on Facebook where I saw a school group came through from South Carolina and stopped by, and
it's it never ends.
Yeah,
and that's a good thing. We have constant school groups in this time of year, especially almost every weekday from now to the end of May. We have school groups coming through. We have military groups coming through. We have several thousand. Usually officers that come through every year in various groups, some of them for at Chatham, some of them, Chancellorsville is probably, one of the most, for them, the most interesting places because kind of the military practice as it exhibits itself at Chancellorsville is still very relevant. And this whole question of problem solving for the military, the military very much enjoys or engages in this kind of present a problem and then have a discussion on how to solve it. And they often use the battlefields and the situation that face commanders, 158 years ago, as examples of thinking and processing information. And those sorts of exercises are timeless. Yes, the tactics change, the technology changes, but the decision-making and the information that's available to them, that is something that is really a timeless exercise in the military. So, yeah, we get probably 3,000 military officers through a year, at least, probably maybe more than that. You come out in any day and you're likely to see a group of 30 or 40 Marines wandering around the park it's interesting. You can, sometimes they come in civilian clothes, sometimes they come in uniforms. You can always tell what branch of the service they're from, even if they're in civilian clothes.
Yeah.
It's always interesting.
Well, in that case, if they go out to Chancellorsville, and I guess they're looking at what Stonewall Jackson did and decided and how he did it, and do they take a historian along to
sometimes
where you're able to look at the, describe the terrain and what was going on?
Well, they do it a couple different ways. They have kind of their own internal process called a staff ride where some of their leaders or instructors or even members of the class, because a lot of times this is Marine Corps University or something like that, will prepare and the individual members will kind of tackle the problem and present the problem to the group. So sometimes they do their own internal staff rides. Sometimes they want one of our people along, which we're happy to do. We always kind of revel in those groups because they're so interested and they're so engaged. And you know, one thing that, you know, when you work for the Park Service, or if you visit national parks, you'll note that Park Service people love interested people. And so we respond to that as well. You know, visitors always get out of a program what they put into it. They don't realize that. But, you know, when they're engaged and interested, that fires us up. So sometimes they do their own thing, their staff rides. Sometimes they use our people. But they're almost always after the same thing, and that is kind of the exercise in critical thinking and decision making and using limited information to make momentous decisions. I mean, think about the amount of information that Lee had available to him or Grant had available to him in the wilderness, and the just the profound nature of the decisions they had to make based on that information. None of us would be comfortable making major decisions with that level of information, but they had no choice than to kind of fill in the blanks. And that's where the genius of command comes, is the ability to conceptualize and kind of fill in the blanks in a way that makes sense. And those commanders who could do that succeeded. Those commanders who filled that kind of blank space with either wishful thinking or catastrophic thinking, they often did not succeed.
But it's interesting. I never thought of it in that context of where we today, knowing the story, the beginning and the end, but if you just take out that little piece and try to think of what they knew and what they were deciding.
Yeah. I mean, a little glimpse of the enemy here, a little glimpse there. That's all. No satellite photos, no aerial stuff. Now, today it's different because the opposition, if you will, our opponents have adapted their tactics to the presence of all that technology. So rather than having these lines of battle or massive columns that satellites can track or air resources can track, you know, they have disappeared into the communities, into these towns and cities, making it much more difficult. So, you know, as soon as you think you've mastered the military art, it changes. And the surest thing about war is that it will evolve constantly over time. And it's very difficult to imagine 50 years hence what, you know, the military exercise will actually look like. History tells us that that's almost unpredictable.
Yeah. John Hennessy here with the National Park Service. We talk about people stopping by and just groups that you deal with. There's also a lot of volunteer opportunities with the Park Service. Now, I don't know what the weather's going to be this Saturday, but it's Park Day on Saturday where people can do things. But I know that there are other, whether it's through Friends of Chatham or other areas, if you want to get involved in being involved with the Park Service, there are options.
There's lots of options. We engage literally hundreds of volunteers each year, some of them for special events like Luminaria, which alone has often 800 people involved, or our regular volunteers who help us serve visitors in the visitor centers or at Chatham. And greet visitors and talk to them. And some of them, if they are around a while and inclined and able, give tours. Some get very proficient at that sort of thing. But we also have, you know, volunteer opportunities with respect to the landscape, helping to maintain the landscape. With respect to research, we have a couple of people now working, for example, on researching the known dead in the National Cemetery, finding out a little bit more. Now that so much is available online, we've never taken the time to gather all that stuff together so that we know as much as we can about the known individuals, about 2,800 out of 15,300 in the National Cemetery. And we even have one fellow, Steve Morin, who is now working on identifying some of the dead in the cemetery. In other words, we have a number of, you know, when the burials were originally done, the headboards were created and the information from the headboards was transcribed, and sometimes it was illegible. And so maybe we have a letter or two or three or four or just a partial transcription, and he is undertaking the effort of figuring out some of who those people are, which you know, may sound like a small thing, an academic thing, but I've always really felt that the least we can do for the men and women who give their lives for our nation is remember their names. And so to me, that effort, which has resulted, I think, so far in 3 new identifications of men buried in the National Cemetery, I mean, that's just one of the greatest things you can do. And to kind of retain that humanity, retain that identity, and give honor to a human name, a person, rather than just a stone with a number on it. So we're excited about that. And that's being done by a volunteer. So we have lots of opportunities like that. If you want to do something exciting like that, if you want to do something that is kind of just routine or mundane, we have that sort of thing too. We have hundreds and thousands of pages of source material to process every year. That requires a tremendous amount of effort. Since Donald Fons retired, our great staff historian, we haven't been able to do that sort of stuff. So actually, we're working on that now, and it's a huge job if it backs up the way that it is. And so we want to avoid that happening. But yes, we have, if you're out in the field, we can get you working out in the field. If you want to be behind a working in a visitor center, we can do that. If you want to work at home on stuff at home, we have transcriptions galore that can be done, you know, letters, diaries, that sort of thing that can be transcribed. So there's lots. Yeah, we can keep half the community busy if they're so inclined.
Anybody they should contact and talk to?
Just contact me. And if I'm not the person to manage it directly, I know the person who does.
Okay.
So the best way is email, and my email is John_Hennessy, Hennessy, at NPS, National Park Service, NPS.gov. If you're interested, send me an email and we'll get you going.
John Hennessy here, the chief historian with the Fredericksburg and Spotsylvania National Military Park. More coming up on News Talk 1230 WFVA.
You're listening to Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA. Got an opinion about today's show? Text the studio now at 540-371-5756. Now, here's the host of Town Talk, Ted Schubel.
John Hennessy here this morning, the chief historian with the Fredericksburg and Spotsylvania National Military Park. I haven't been over to Chatham, but I guess this is always a nice. I like coming this time of year because each week it changes so much. Is the even with the cold, are the flowers starting to come up?
The tulips. I walked in this morning, and the tulips are in full bloom this morning. Of course, they might get blown away this afternoon in the windstorm that apparently is coming. But yeah, this is a very pretty time. The tulips and the daffodils have overlapped, which doesn't always happen, it's very pretty right now. And a lot going on at Chatham. We've got repointing of some of the brick walls and a big project there. The Friends of Chatham have funded the repair of the cupola that houses the Pan statue, which is a big project, almost $20,000 they've raised to do that. And that work is ongoing now. So come to Chatham. It's a busy place. One of the things we've noticed about Chatham in the last 2 to 3 years is that the schools, local schools, have discovered it, not for the reason you think, but for prom pictures. And on Saturday night, every Saturday night from here on out, that place will be swarmed with kids and their parents taking prom pictures.
I never thought of that.
We hadn't either until it started to happen. And
somebody sees it on Facebook, I guess.
Yeah, so it's all a social media thing. And there were days last spring where we had literally hundreds of people show up. And this is all after we're closed.
Yeah.
And so the first time it happened, we didn't know they were coming. And so weren't prepared for it. And it was a big traffic jam and all that stuff. Now we'll have people there. But it is, so steer clear of Chatham on Saturday nights in the spring unless you want to bear witness to a little bit of mayhem on the grounds.
Never thought of that. I was just going to say to you, well, I guess it's because you opened it up and now people see it and they want to.
Well, that's true too. I mean, that's partly true, but, you know, it has been discovered. I think a lot of the other sites locally are not accessible. And now that Chatham is open in the
yeah,
you know, we leave the gate open in the evening now, and people can circulate through the grounds. It's a great place to get your picture taken. So, and you know, most this is all just families, you know, coming in or groups of kids coming to take their pictures themselves, with usually with phones and things like that. Not a lot of professional photography going on in this, but it is a spectacle, that's for sure.
Well, it's, we've talked about it before, how Chatham really is really such a focal point in this area for pictures of all kinds.
Well, it's, you know, I saw an email come through this morning, I think, from the city asking what's the greatest view of Fredericksburg. Well, there's no competition.
Yeah.
I mean, the view from Chatham of Fredericksburg is literally world famous. And and since we did the clearing at Chatham a few years ago, it really is a beautiful view. If you want a great view of this town of Fredericksburg looking much as it did in 1862, Chatham is the place to come. But the other thing that attends that clearing is the view of Chatham. And now it's much more visible from the town, from the city of Fredericksburg, than it used to be. You can see it coming across the Chatham Bridge. Anything north of William Street has a pretty good view of Chatham these days. You know, I'm upper floor of the Fredericksburg Area Museum. You can see Chatham from the second story of the library. I mean, there's a tremendous view of Chatham from there. So, you know, the work of the Friends, the kind of reemergence of the gardens, which the Friends have helped to re-energize over the years, the clearing, and the expanded programming that we're doing. I mean, we're always learning stuff about Chatham. You know, we've watched the visitation at Chatham increase by about 20 to 30% in the last 5 years. So, and that continues. So it is a busy place. If we get some nice warm weather, which has been elusive, we'd get our kind of accustomed spring rush. We really haven't done that yet. This weekend is the traditional week after Easter, which is spring break weekend, which is usually one of our busiest of the year. But we've had kind of cruddy weather all week, and
it has.
It's been busy, but not as busy as usual.
One of the things the Park Service has done well in the last few years, and is social media, and in Facebook page is just terrific. I enjoy it. One of my most favorite. This to me though, if you're really into history, you enjoy. Because last month you had whatever Women's History Month.
That's this right now.
Oh, it's right now.
Yeah.
Okay, then this must be. Then this is a. This is.
Well,
a,
I guess now we're in April, so
it was in March. Okay, it was in late March.
Right.
So you had a number of the historians were talking about books, and all really interesting. But one of my most favorite posts ever was. Your historian Pete had a book. Someone then, a reader, posted a picture and said, "Does anyone think that Pete resembles John Singleton Mosby?" And put a picture of Mosby up, and you've got Pete. And I thought, who sees that kind of thing?
Well,
but you see, on your Facebook page, you see that a lot. It's fascinating the things that people see.
Two parts of that. One, our Facebook page is run by Beth Parnitza, one of our historians. And she is very creative. She loves to ask questions in her programs and on the Facebook.
Yeah.
She just has a tremendous instinct for what works and what resonates with people, and they respond. We have really, I think, one of the smartest Facebook pages going.
Yes, I agree.
As for Peter Mogul, also one of our historians, he's our black powder guy. He kind of manages our living history programs. He is also the model, for example, of the monochrome figure at the Chancellorsville Visitor Center, which is kind of the thematic overview of the exhausted soldier. We call him Weeping Pete. And Weeping Pete is actually about to make his appearance in commercial products. So if he looks like Mosby, fame is following him as well, although for different reasons, thankfully. But I've not quite seen the resemblance. But, I mean, of course, Mosby didn't have a beard. But
no.
Peter has a beard. And, you know, can you really trust the public? I've heard people say you look like Tom Cruise, too. And that's just, as we know, that's not really true.
Well, The Facebook page is and we're going to talk about something else I saw on Facebook, but it's a great thing to like because you find out about a lot of things, and like you say, it's not just a lot of this is what we're doing, but there's you delve into a lot of things.
And it asks, you know, it shares kind of interesting vignettes, stories. It asks important questions of people and encourages them to answer, and there have been some really interesting conversations on our Facebook page about various things.
So check it out, like it, and you'll find out what's going on with the National Park Service. John Hennessy here, the Chief Historian with the Fredericksburg and Spotsylvania National Military Park. When we come back, we're going to talk about some archaeologists at Elwood and just finding out about, still learning about history at sites. We'll also talk about history hikes and some other stuff. More on News Talk 1230 WFVA. It's 8:29.
Okay, listen, we got to talk about something.
Talk. Done right. News Talk 1230 WFVA Fredericksburg, a Centennial Broadcasting Station. Welcome back to Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA. You can weigh in on today's Town Talk topic on Facebook at WFVA 1230. Now, your host, Ted Schubel.
John Hennessy, the Chief Historian with the Fredericksburg and Spotsylvania Military Park, is here this morning with us. Interesting, I saw on Facebook where you had some archaeologists recently checking out, looking for some things at Elwood, and I saw that, and I thought, you see that all the time. The ongoing archaeology at Ferry Farm, and I know all around there's around here some of the historic sites. It's so fascinating to me. And a lot of times, what you're looking at and trying to find something, you're going off of or trying to looking at a picture from the time.
There's usually some reason that prompts us. Now, you know, the work that has been done at Ferry Farm is really quite different than what you normally see, because they're trying to uncover a story. Most archaeology is done in connection with a specific project to mitigate. You know, if you're going to build a new maintenance facility or something, you got to make sure nothing's there.
Yeah.
And so, you know, that kind of archaeology, while it sometimes turns up interesting things, it doesn't really fire the soul. But the kind of investigational stuff that Ferry Farm, George Washington Foundation, has done, that's the stuff that kind of fires the imagination. Park Service doesn't often get an opportunity to do that. But last year, this is kind of an interesting story. Last year, a photo researcher turned up or discovered that on at the American Antiquarian Society in Worcester, Massachusetts, are just a huge collection of stereo views, photographs, taken during and after the Civil War. And among those were probably 20 or 25 images taken in 1866 of our local sites that we had never seen before.
Really?
Now, in 1866, there was a medical expedition to Fredericksburg, to the Fredericksburg battlefields, to collect medical specimens for the Army Medical Museum, which is at Walter Reed today, and many of those specimens are still there. And the leader of that expedition brought along a photographer. And that photographer took a series of 121 images along the way. Now, some of those images have been known to us for a long time. John Cummings of Spotsylvania County, who's really done some tremendous work on some of these photos, is actually going to do a program for us on the 21st of April he and I are going to do it together out at Spotsylvania, that looks at the photographs taken in April 1866 of Spotsylvania. But I digress a little bit. So last fall, a researcher, a guy named Bob Zeller, discovered these images at the American Antiquarian Society, and there were about 20 images of that 1866 series that we had never seen before. And one of them was an image taken of Elwood, which is on the Wilderness Battlefield. It's open by volunteers, another volunteer opportunity. It's managed entirely by volunteers out there. It's open this week and this coming weekend, and it'll be open weekends going forth into the summer and then full-time during the summer. But this photograph, which was of Elwood, taken from a distance of probably a quarter of a mile, showed the landscape to the north of the house. And one of the big questions that we've had at Elwood and at Chatham, for that matter, is where did the enslaved population live? Where did these people live? Now, at Elwood, we know they lived kind of all over a little bit, but we had a sense that there were a bank of slave cabins quite near the house. And this photograph showed those slave cabins very clearly. And so we took that information and contacted our archaeological team in the region, who have all the equipment, the ground penetrating radar, the all these fancy sorts of non-invasive techniques. And so they came down a couple weeks ago using the photographs and trying to locate specifically on the ground where these cabins were. We haven't gotten the results of that back yet. It's a little bit like an X-ray or an MRI sort of thing, where you take it and then they take it back and they mash it all together and come up with a theory or an idea. We're still waiting on the results of that. But the point is, and the point you make, is that we're always learning stuff. We're always finding new images. In this case, we're very fortunate to be able to follow that with some archaeology that will ground truth. You know, when you see a photograph of a place that's taken from a quarter mile away, depth perception is very difficult.
Yeah.
And so it's not as simple as saying, well, it looks like it's right there in the photograph. But we want to go out and confirm on the ground so that we don't make any mistakes going forward with projects or anything that could affect that site. So once we have that information, that site will become, you know, kind of a hallowed space for us, as, you know, any of the contributing structures at a place like Elwood would be. And we'll be able to avoid it. But more importantly, we'll be able to interpret it, because people like to know where stuff was and where stuff happened.
So would you dig down if you knew that there was a foundation or something there?
Well, it depends on what the archaeology is fundamentally destructive, because once you dig, you're destroying.
Yeah.
You know, that by definition is you. So you have to kind of balance what you're going to learn from what you're going to destroy. And one of the things we're mindful of today is that the technology of archaeology has changed tremendously, and will probably continue to change to the point where at some point in the future we even need to break the ground. If your goal is to recover stuff, then of course, yes. But if your goal is to identify and confirm subterranean features associated with a slave cabin or another structure, probably in the future you're not going to have to do that. So we'd like to avoid doing that now if we can. One of the challenges that we face is in interpreting enslaved populations at places like Chatham and Elwood, which during the Civil War were owned by the same person and who collectively owned about 100, just under 100 human beings. One of the challenges that we face is that the facilities that the landowners like J. Horace Lacy built to accommodate those people for that in which they were to work and to live weren't built to last forever. They were generally of poorer construction, not always, but generally of poorer construction. And so most commonly, you know, the big house remains. As at Chatham, there's a kitchen and a laundry that was brick that remain. Nothing else remains of the up to 30 or so outbuildings that were there at one time. And so the challenge of interpreting slavery on these sites in the way that the Park Service traditionally has done it, which is, in other words, to bring you to a place and say, okay, this is where this was happening. It's greater for the subject of slavery. It's a greater challenge when it comes to slavery than it is to anything else, because we often don't know where those sites are. And so I think across the Park Service, across, you know, the whole spectrum of plantations and house museums and all of that sort of thing, there's a tremendous emphasis now on trying to figure out the location, the nature of the resources. Some of them, like the Wyatt Aiken House in Charleston, have the slave quarters. We do not. And so we're in the process of trying to understand our landscape a little bit better so that we can put people on it. And their mind's eye can understand and hopefully empathize a little bit with this experience of the majority population at a place like Chatham.
Yeah.
You know, the slave population at Chatham was five, six, seven, eight, nine, sometimes 10 times the white population. And so the need to talk about them in order to understand the site, I mean, there's hardly anything more important we can do.
That's so interesting that you still are, the pictures
show
up that you don't know about.
It's funny, they seem to come in waves. Every few years, we'll suddenly have an influx of images that we've never seen. The most common things that we see now are images taken after the Civil War, oftentimes by veterans visiting. And over the last 10 or 15 years, we've gotten some tremendous collections of images taken on, veterans revisiting the battlefields. And some of those are extremely illuminating. And but they're always exciting. It's always kind of an interesting thing to see how your mind's eye, your conception of these places prior to seeing the photographs matches the reality.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's not even close. In the case of the view at Elwood, it was exactly what we expected to see, with the one exception, and that was, rather than having smaller kind of individual size slave cabins, the cabins in this view were larger duplex slave cabins. So we didn't know that. But otherwise, it was the orchard was there, the ice house was there, the spring house is there, the smokehouse is there, the dairy, all those things. So sometimes it confirms what you know, and sometimes, or confirms what you think you know, and sometimes it just blows your bubble to smithereens.
Is there a picture or an artifact or something from around here that you would really, if it existed? Because I always think when you tell the story of Lincoln speaking over on the bank steps, not knowing, you just wish. You wish somebody had taken have a picture of something like that.
Well, there's huge swaths of town that we have no imagery of at all, or very little imagery of. But the fact is that Fredericksburg is better covered by photography than most places. And even a place like Belle Plain, which is largely forgotten by folks today, there are 10 or 15 images of Belle Plain that are tremendous images and allow us to understand exactly what went on out at Belle Plain. Sure, there's landscape views that we would really love to have that would help us a great deal. At Chancellorsville, for example, we don't have a lot at Chancellorsville. In fact, this new bundle of images includes several new Chancellorsville images. Spotsylvania Courthouse, we have a number of images, but we can't locate all of them on the ground, although John Cummings in our tour on the 21st will attempt to do so. But I don't know that there's one place. I think we'd love to have some better images of Chatham, especially on the land side of the house. We've got a sketch, but nothing else. I'd love a couple of good pictures of some of the streets. Caroline Street, for example, there is not a single image. I take that back. There's one image of Caroline Street during the Civil War, and that's of the burned out ruins of the bank building that stood on the corner of William and Caroline Street, where the old Woolworths building is today, now an antique shop. But we have no other images of Caroline Street in the main part of town, which was, of course, Main Street. It was called Main Street at the time. We don't have any images. That would be nice to have, for sure, something like that.
When we come back, we're going to talk about history hikes and history at sunset. And we'll wrap this up with John Hennessy, chief historian with the Fredericksburg and Spotsylvania National Military Park. Town Talk powered in part this morning by Stafford Tourism. For information on events and activities, visit tourstaffordva.com.
You're listening to Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA. Got an opinion about today's show? Text the studio now at 540-371-5756. Now, here's the host of Town Talk, Ted Schubel.
John Hennessy here this morning with the Fredericksburg and the Spotsylvania National Military Park as we wrap things up. You had this last weekend. Well, history hikes is kind of a new thing. The last couple of years that you started to do
fit history.
That's what I mean. Yeah, fit history, and it's way different than any other kind of programs you usually have.
Right. Well, the goal, as the title implies, is to get your heart rate up a bit. It is, you know, and I've said this before, but it's the idea is to turn a traditional tour on its head, where normally we would go out and we would talk 80% of the time and walk 20%. Now we walk 80% of the time and talk 20%. And they've been very popular. Last weekend we had about 115 people, which was maybe a little bit more than
It was a chilly day, too.
Well, it was. It did, but it turned into a beautiful day on Saturday, ultimately. We hiked an area of the park that literally no one on the program had ever been on, and did some bushwhacking. And this is a time of year where you can do some bushwhacking before the things leaf out, and stood in some woods that, you know, heck, have had very few people in them since the war.
Huh.
Just beautiful woods.
Yeah.
Walked on a road that soldiers used during the war, but probably we had more people on that road than had been on the road since the armies left 150 some odd years ago.
That's fun to do those kind of things,
yeah,
though, just
yeah.
to know that.
Right. And so people really enjoyed that. So the Fit History series is 4 hikes in the spring, 4 hikes in the fall. And they vary. We try to move them around. That last week's was at the wilderness. The next one is actually a highly civilized one. We're going to leave from Chatham, and we're going to hike the Chatham Trail, bike trail, from Chatham all the way down to the beach at Falmouth, and talk about various sites that no one pays any attention to along the way. Including the river itself down at the beach, where we'll talk about the crossing and the exodus of slaves across the river and all of that. So that'll be fun. Not a terribly long hike. I think the round trip there is about 3.6 miles or so. Last weekend's was about 4 miles. The program after that, 2 weeks hence, will be Frank O'Reilly doing the Chancellor History Trail. And his hikes are always vigorous and energetic. And then we will close in May with a program, a Fit History hike, focused on kind of the natural environment out at Spotsylvania by Becca Jameson of our staff. So we're excited. We've really liked the Fit History hikes. They bring out people that we have not seen before, and including a higher kind of quotient of younger people who like to physically do stuff. So we're very fond of the series, and we see no reason to stop it because they've been very, very popular so far.
And you can find out the schedules on either the website or the Facebook page. Right, has all kinds of heads up when they're coming. We'll deal more with the history at sunset as we get closer. But have you got the kind of the skeleton of the series?
We've got it set. We've got it set. We haven't announced it yet. We're still working on confirming a number of dates, but we've got a number of new programs. We're going to do a program at Hartwood Church this year, which we've never done before. Kind of a Hartwood Church inside and out sort of thing, because there was actually a battle at Hartwood Church.
But the
place itself has a wonderful history and a powerful history. We're doing Hartwood Church. We'll do some programs on monuments this year in memory at the Sunken Road. Becky Oaks and Beth Parnitza will be doing that. We're actually going to reschedule several of the programs that were canceled last year.
I was going to say, last year the weather was...
Almost half of our series was postponed at various times last year. So I think of the 10 programs we're doing, 7 will be new. So that's always exciting for us. We always learn stuff that we didn't know before when we do new programs like that. We'll also be doing a series of campfire programs that are going to be a little bit different this year. We're going to do one that's on the senses and, you know, have some smells and sounds that people might not have thought about, some various other things. And then we have other ideas for programs. I'd love to do a program on nutrition and food as it relates to military service over the ages. Maybe have some rations from 1862 versus some MREs today. I'd love to do a program challenging the community to design little boats to carry things across the Rappahannock River as the soldiers did to trade tobacco and newspapers and all that stuff.
We will talk about that more. John Hennessy with the Fredericksburg and Spotsylvania National Military Park. Thank you. See you soon.
Thanks for listening to Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA. The views expressed by the host and guests on this program are their own and not necessarily those of this station, its management, or Centennial Broadcasting. The Glenn Beck Program is next on News Talk 1230 WFVA.